Welcome to the On Point podcast. I'm Rod Milicevic, and this is where we meet people who work in and around the built environment sector. We share ideas and experiences and hopefully get some insight into best practice, how things are changing through technology and ever-increasing calls to sustainability. If you're a building owner or manager or contractor or just someone working in the sector or have an interest in, there must be something of value for you here. We'd love to hear your comments, suggestions for guests, and yes, you may well be one of them one day. So please subscribe, drop us a message, and more importantly, enjoy and get informed. Today, I'm joined by Nicholas Wern, who is the master of the metaverse and has been, we've had some great conversations about digital twins and virtual real estate. And I'm really looking forward to this because I think Nicholas is really getting deep into the space. I'm looking to learn a lot about the interface of BIM, blockchain, NFTs, and how we can just bring some improvements to this industry. So Nicholas, thanks for joining and welcome.
I think that was a fantastic introduction. I'm actually looking for a new moniker. I was used to formerly known as Prince, not really, but formerly known as the Building Whisperer, making buildings talk to people. Now that you, like you said, venturing more into digital twins in healthcare, manufacturing, and definitely, metaverse enablement, I think like the master of the metaverse is fantastic. It reminds me of He-Man and, all this cool stuff when you were growing up as a kid as well. So, to your point about, NFTs, BIM, blockchain, AI, digital twins, I think, let's just get to it, right?
Is yeah, that okay? Of course.
I think, everything is possible in terms of technology. The problem is, of course, the people. And the industry and the dynamics and the processes and, the existing landscape of, this, if we talk about real estate. So I think, it's an interesting question. If we talk about blockchain first, what is it? Is it distributed ledgers, technology, or blockchain? Just to simplify it, it's, how to make, digital witnesses of transactions. When it comes to blockchain, that's, again, secure. It could be at least, it could be tamper-proof. It could be, secured in place and time that, this happened at this point in time. And these were, the people involved, et cetera. But let's go with just an example. So today, when you're selling a mine or, again, like real estate portfolio or just an asset, it takes a lot of time. And the ones that are making a lot of money on this is, consulting companies like Deloitte or Accenture or whatever that might be for the DD process. Due diligence, right? Mm. Is everything in order? And this is for banks as well. Is everything in order? Do these assets have a roof? What is the status of X, Y, and Z? The financials, all these kind of things. That can take anything from weeks to months. And it is so much time that is being wasted, to be honest. So let's say they would have this, a digital twin, let's say, or like this information in with blockchain technology, where the BIM information, if you go for the real estate lifecycle, so the architects deliver a 3D model complete with information, and then the consultants add to that, and you have this construction process working with BIM, so building information models, and you actually link it, or you at least incorporate data from where it was made, and everything about the building information models that is attached to the relationships between where they are in the building, when it was procured, how much it cost, all these kind of things. And that follows the entire life cycle, okay? And that, let's say that BIM is being stored in, again, like a digital twin capabilities with a blockchain. So once you want to sell this stuff, once you want to sell the portfolio or this asset, it's a click of a button.
There's a real estate metaverse thing, which is really the first on-ramp for digital conversion. And mm-hmm. they are selling nearly £1 million in, say, Decentraland, where you can buy property and land. And obviously I've an interest in that because I'd love to be able to change glass in the metaverse and in these sort yeah. of like sandbox and these things. But what's the reality of that?
So they built up like a metaverse. Is it, based in reality or is this like pure... virtual speculation like Project Entropia and, these kind of things? Or is it tied somehow to actual, something in the real world?
Well, this at the moment, I think it's just people land grabbing and creating virtual spaces in, say, Decentraland or Somnium or, maybe bringing some gaming tools into it. However, and this is really my question for you, is if there is a sort of a new building and they've built it in digital twins, is there any market to actually have it in the metaverse as well, so that if you could repair and maintain it or do test runs on it as though you would in digital twins, is there some comparison between the two, or will they be integrated, or is it just a folly?
No. Of course, it's definitely not a folly. I mean, anything and everything that can happen will, of course, happen. But let's go sort of, if I'm allowed, Rod, to continue my story, I can weave it hopefully together. So you have sort of like the information, it can travel between, again, like the architects, you know, what has happened beforehand, the construction, and then into the asset, and then once it's going to get sold, right? So the DD process is a continuous DD process that sort of happens automatically, so to say. So when you have, like, let's say you have like a whole portfolio of assets, exactly like this, with the context, all the maintenance records, everything that has happened is there at the click of a button. They get all the information they need in a way that they can, you know, make the decisions upon it. The evaluation, you know, people, they don't really have to, you know, visit. They can either visit, you know, in, so like in the metaverse, I would say. So that you invite them to the digital twin where they can inspect these kind of things and have a blockchain, you know, again, with everything that has happened is happening as well. And then what happens then is that, you know, these assets or these portfolio of assets become sort of like tokenized. This is sort of what you're aiming at, I think. You know, that's where you have like metaverse enablement for real, where you can have these platforms where today, and I think, you know, it sort of exists, I guess, but more in a rudimentary way where you have people involved. But then once you're at that level, when everything is again stored in the blockchain, and then you can make smart contracts and execute these kind of things either automatically or frictionless, where the DD processes might be a couple of days, or it's even going towards, you know, machine-to-machine communication. And I think that is that's the interesting aspect of, again, you know, so the metaverse enablement is basically when you're connecting the virtual world with the real world. So, but I think like what you discussed, you know, before, what you brought up, it's not necessarily like metaverse, at least that's my sort of, my take at least, you know, that's more, they created a different universe, and that's sort of why they're making these real estate transactions. The problem with that is like, it's sort of with, what's it called, Ready Player One, is first to the egg. I think they can make a lot of money, but what happens when there is a proliferation of these virtual worlds that, you know, do exactly the same stuff, you know? Mm. And I think like the when they're tied to reality, I think that becomes super duper interesting, because that means that, you know, companies as well as nations, you know, if you talk about smart nations, they can do their process and invite the whole world. And again, this is happening sort of, I mean, around the world to secure in, you know, development countries or even, you know, developed countries, I guess, with the smart chain. Or like blockchain and smart contracts, that I actually own this piece of land. But I think like the transactional aspects of this is that it becomes, you know, let's say I want to scrape the world for interesting, you know, sites to purchase that are close to water, okay? And I run that script and I automate this. And in a split second, I bought land on 550 different places, you know, with access to water, like 50 meters, whatever, and everything has been, you know, transferred into my ownership. Everything, everyone knows that I own it and no one else can do it. And that, you know, took a split of a second that otherwise would have taken, I don't know, a lifetime probably to do, right? So I think that's sort of like the interesting aspects. And if you can combine this with metaverse enablement, you can also say, hey, do you want to live in my resort? Yeah, of course I do. Well, do you want to live it, you know, in virtual reality, or do you actually want to, you know, live there in Serengeti, or I don't know where whatever it might be, or say like Canary Islands or something? It doesn't really matter. And then you'd like have the best of both worlds, right? So I think that's, for me, is, you know, the metaverse enablement, when it again, like, it combines and connects the two. I think the next step would be like multiverses and omniverses, where it's sort of either separate realities or alternate realities as well. But the metaverse for me is the connection between the reality and the, you know, the virtual world that becomes sort of like the metaverse, so to say. And you can expand on it, you know, infinitely in the virtual world, but it needs to have some connection to the real world. Otherwise, it's just, you know, some kind of virtual reality or multiverses.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people are still, probably if they're listening to this, they're thinking, this is a bit mind-blowing, because who would actually want to go on a virtual holiday? Let's say, for instance, if something that sprung to mind for me is I've always wanted to do like the Paris-Dakar rally. And to be able to actually put the car within the space and the area and then just see how it would function, put test data into it, put my own body type into it. You could actually really run the whole thing as a test run and just see how it works. It's almost like a virtual test lab.
Let's just stay with that for 5 minutes. I mean, it's I don't know if it's off topic, but it's super interesting.
Yeah.
So I got, you know, I got an offer to be as a consultant for a city in Saudi Arabia for tourism. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the same in Jordan, like Petra, where, you know, they have sort of like historical sites, you know, fantastic stuff, but it was lacking on the tourism aspects. So my idea was to go at it, you know, with a metaverse enablement strategy. So they wanted to like X amount of million of visitors per year. I could give them 100 million visitors per year, where 1 million was, you know, in the physical space, where 99 million were in, again, like the metaverse, right? People from all over the world can visit the sites, understand the historical aspects, you know, do really, really cool stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And then once they've done that, they would also, you know, get them to visit that site in reality, so to say, or real life, right? But they also can monetize a lot of different things, and they could, you know, get awareness and do all the things that you could do in the real world, but even more in the digital world. So, but let's take your example of the Dakar, Paris-Dakar rally. Okay, so I looked at LinkedIn the other day, and there's this guy. So he's basically 3D printed his own car simulation something. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he built it up from scratch, and then working with generative design, which is basically, okay, I want it to be, you know, based for this person. I want it to, you know, have this weight. And again, like telling the system to sort of create this. Instead of, you know, they just put the parameters, so parametric design, and then it generates sort of like the outcome that you're looking for. But anyway, so you have that shipped to your house, Rod, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have that simulation, you know, from a car shipped to your house, combined with the latest, you know, Tesla suit. It's again, if you haven't seen the movie Ready Player One, they have this full body suit, so like haptic feedback. So it's like you're there, right? And then what you could do is, again, like you have these, you know, VR goggles from Varjo, let's say. So Varjo is, you know, if you haven't listened to, I don't know if you're going to plug my podcast. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
okay. So Beyond Buildings podcast, I think like the last one was Future of Construction. The one before that was I'm Sorry I Had to Hack Your Eyes with Greg Demchak
at
Bentley Systems. I mean, it's a lot of fun, right? And that was basically a recorded session where we just, you know, went at it again. But it's okay. So Varjo is this virtual reality, but it's more. It's a combination of augmented reality, virtual reality, like totally immersive reality, where you put on these goggles and they record, you know, reality, and then they transpose it back to you. So that, again, like if you want to go out in the city, your city, wherever you are, and then for that to be Japan in the 1820s, you could actually get that to happen, right? So it's really, really cool stuff. But I mean, so combine, you know, you have the simulation, you know, car simulator at your home, and then you have, you know, these immersive goggles, plus you have the Tesla haptic suit, and then someone has, you know, scanned this area, Paris-Dakar. So either you can just experience it virtually, and it would be the same as in, you know, for you to do it, well, not the same probably, but like similar at least, right?
You
can do it for training purposes. And you say like, okay, in 5 years, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to train for 5 years. That would be really cool on its own. But you could also potentially, you know, sit next to someone, let's say, you know, so if you have, you know, like a data feed from someone actually driving the Paris-Dakar rally, they could actually have like 10,000 co-pilots at any given point in time that are there with them, you know, driving or, you know, as a co-pilot or a co-driver. So you can get that immersive experience as well. So I think like the combination of modern technologies is very, very interesting. And then, you know, we haven't even discussed like NFTs or blockchain or these kind of things, but it's just, you know, it's just underlying technology. So I mean like everything is possible. I mean, we could get this done, you know, next week. Maybe we should. I don't know. It would be super fun, to be honest. It would be really fun. But I think, like, and I think it's the underpinning of, you know, how can we make this happen? I mean, we first have to get the band together in terms of people. We have to understand sort of where we are and what we're talking about, because people are not necessarily great at understanding abstract data. And I'm in these calls, you know, with innovation people, self-driving vehicles, self-driving buildings, and all these kind of things. And the problem is, which also, you know, caters to Elon Musk's biggest problem, which is domain experts are always individually correct, but always collectively wrong. And that's the problem. When you put these people together, they view the world from their own expertise. And getting them to understand a shared piece of reality based on teams, based on Word documents or whatever that is, you know, almost impossible. So yeah, you need the digital twins, and, you know, you need a virtual, as in the visual pieces of reality, to start with. You know, you need the reality, because that's where we're going to end up. So I don't understand why people are, you know, so, you know, they don't focus on it too much. But anyway, so that's just another, like, pet peeve of mine.
I think the collaboration, the new revolution, is completely collaborative. And you know, like, I'm seeing it from the younger generation. I mean, they don't think twice about open source. They don't think twice about sharing. You know, they could have been working on something for 20 years, and they will share it in an instance with a stranger that they meet online. Yeah. Knowing that there could be some improvement. But going back, I mean, you just said something about self-driving buildings. I mean, we're both in, you know, and love construction and bringing that back to, you know, what I said about quality of work is directly proportional to the quality of information available. And, you know, we have a thing called SMALL. So, you know, whenever we go into a project, we think about the scope, the specification, the materials, access, logistics, you know, the labor. That is, you know, like an acronym for SMALL, because we submit the small stuff so the client doesn't have to. And if we then took that to the next level and said, okay, well, let's all talk about that. Let's all collaborate on it. Let's all look at it from a digital twin point of view and have access. Like, my pet peeve is obviously the lack of that quality of information, the lack of O&Ms. And so how would I bring back? I mean, maybe this is sort of like a mentoring session, because it will be so useful for anyone listening. You know, what can we bring and offer clients going forward, so we become a future orientated, you know, like, we're working with self-driving buildings, like you said, and bring something extra, so that, you know, we could have our guys, you know, experiencing, you know, talk about training. I mean, if you train guys using the Varjo and haptic suits and had someone in the field who for the first time, you know, like, they're actually following someone hanging off a building, or using, you know, like, working with cranes and they're experiencing real life stuff, but they're doing it from the comfort and from a classroom. You know, is that a reality now?
Yeah, of course. Of course it is. I mean, it depends what you define as reality now. Are people doing it at scale? Of course not. But I mean, if you're looking at, you know, the Gartner hype cycle, like I've said before, everything that is there, you know, 95%, you know, is possible today at the cutting edge. Okay, so of course it's possible, but, you know, it's not the right question to ask, I would say, because, you know, from a technological perspective, everything is possible. And if I go back in time when I was studying, like, 15 years ago, I had a friend who was a developer, and I had, you know, a lot of ideas, and he said, Nicholas, and I asked him about, you know, technology, blah, blah, blah. Nicholas, never talk about technology, okay? Everything is possible. Just tell me, you know, what you want done. You know, how it's being done today, what you want to improve, and I can fix it for you. Okay. I, of course, forgot about that. And I've been talking about AI and IoT and digital twins and buzzword bingo for the last 10 years. But that's sort of, you know, that's what everything has to start there. You know, what is the situation right now, Rod? What is the problems that you or the customers are experiencing? What does that lead to? And what, you know, what do you want done? What is, you know, the ultimate way of doing these kind of things? So it goes back exactly what you said, you know, to the Paris Dakar. Maybe you wanted, that's your dream. It's okay. So start tomorrow, you know, do that, you know, exactly like you said. do it from the comfort of your home for the next 5 years, and then actually get it done, knowing that you can do it. Maybe then it's not as fun because you've been doing it for every day for 5 years, but you know what I mean. And I think, you know, that's exactly how I think, you know, we need to attack these problems. And I think, you know, definitely, you know, weave in education and learning from how it's actually being done today. Because I think right now, again, pet peeve, I have a lot of them, but it's how education is being done. You learn something written from someone that has made the, like the fifth edition, which is basically like a foreword that was relevant 10 years ago. And then there's such a big gap between what can be done and what is being done at the cutting edge to what is being done in the mass market, as mm-hmm. well as what was being taught in schools. And the benefit with digital twins, and again, okay, like modern technology, is that you can, you know, travel through time and you're not limited by space and time. So basically what you're saying, you can have someone hanging out, you know, of a skyscraper, have them, you know, kitted with all the right information, and then, you know, you can copy paste that, have that as a training environment for, you know, people going into schools, or even turn that into a game. So Siemens did this. Okay. So Siemens turned, I don't know if it was their gas turbine, but was one of their processes into a game. It was actually smart grid, I think. So you could be like a smart grid operator, you know, in a game. And they learned a lot about that from how, you know, customers and users were interacting with their system. And so that led to, you know, UI UX improvements, as well as leading to more people interested in the business, understanding the relevancy of actually having, you know, the power for your mobile phones, et cetera, et cetera. So there are so many fantastic, you know, avenues on how to get this done, but it always starts in where companies are right now. You know, what is the situation right now? What are the problems? What are the implications? What are the opportunities and needs that either you want to see or the customers want to see?
Okay.
Does that make sense, or does that answer part of the question?
No. The questions always just will give more answers than which will then bring even more questions. But it's fascinating to just have your mind stretched, which I am, and I think about it a lot. You know, it really does inspire me. I mean, why do you love doing what you do?
Well, now I love it because I get to do what I know that I, you know, could do like 20 years ago. It's just that no one believed that I could do it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think, you know, my mission has been for the last, I would say, 20 years, you know, growing up here in Sweden, watching a lot of different movies, reading The Phantom. I don't know if you have that in UK, but, you know, it was tough on the, you know, the evil people, A Man of Justice, and then, you know, reading about Superman, watching these kind of movies. So I always wanted to save the world, or like make the world a better place for everyone, right? That has been my mission. And the other side has been to, you know, own or operate or be part of a company that operates in all countries in the world. Mm. Just those two small things. And now, and like 7 years ago, I went into the smart building space or like the building industry. It just happened by happenstance. And I just, you know, saw that if we do something about buildings, we can actually vastly improve the way, you know, for most people, right? Buildings do exist, you know, sort of everywhere. If we improve, you know, the indoor well-being, you know, life quality stuff, you know, we can have less people that are sick, more productivity, more well-being, do better overall. Going to do it, you know, more for energy efficiency's sake. And, you know, again, like the smartphone concept for me, just buildings are basically like a smartphone where you can enable an app store on top, which again is fed by, you know, real-time data, having this self-driving building stored in the blockchain where you can have NFTs of the individual assets that are being serviced in some way, shape or form. And you sort of know what everything is going to happen. And then there's, you know, a lot of people waiting for this to happen. You have a lot of people on the IT side, right? Consultancy companies, Google-esque companies, and also like the whole gamer market, where they would love to do more stuff with existing buildings. But there's, you know, the gap between what is, you know, technologically possible in a sense and what is actually feasible, because still buildings are hard to get into. Mm. It's really, really difficult. So there's a separation between OT and IT layer, and it's just difficult. Okay, so the answer to your question is, buildings for me represent an opportunity to make life better for everyone. And I'm sort of drawn to some of the most challenging situations because, again, I really want to solve all the problems in the world. So if there is a problem to be solved, you know, I want to solve it. And if no one really wants to solve it, like it hasn't been with buildings, I still want to solve it even more, right? So now I am at that point where I'm being invited to, you know, global conferences by Siemens. I'm working with AI, digital twin enablement, for some of the biggest companies in the world. And it's just because I love to solve problems and I love to help people. And I want to do it in ways that can be not just one-offs, right? But actually, you know, you let's say, you know, for your job, Rod, okay? Mm. So we take, you know, one of your settings, we create that sort of into a digital twin, you know, VR, XR enablement strategies. We make it so that we turn it into sort of a game and we export that to any and every university in the world. Okay. Yeah. So they can, you know, access this in their classrooms. They can access what it's like to do these kind of things. And then they can help improve existing ways of working. They get a feel for this, understand this. And once they're going to start working for you, they've already been working with this, you know, virtually for 3 years or for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I think like that would help, you know, bring transparency and understanding. And, you know, again, like skill shortage gap. Because I don't know if you have data on your side, but I think like most traditional industries have a skill shortage gap. Oh, you have a lot of knowledge stored in people as well as systems, to be honest, where, you know, unstructured data is like 80% of any company in the world right now, probably more in some industries like real estate and construction, where unstructured data means, you know, it's in people's heads or it's in, you know, systems and it's really, really hard to get out. And that makes it really difficult for, you know, older generations, so to say, to transfer their knowledge of their building or their processes into the minds of younger generations, and also harder for younger generations that, you know, have to select between Netflix, Google, I don't know, some cool companies, Unreal or Epic or whatever, and working with, you know, real estate, right? And then, you know, the interview is being done, you know, physically. Your best tool is pen and paper and Excel. And the other, you know, best tools are, again, like XR or Varjo. I like the choice is pretty easy to make. I mean, this is what I love. This is why I'm talking about it like a machine gun here, because I really love to solve these problems. I love to help people so that, you know, don't waste time.
You know, like to me, life is, if you love, you know, it's an acronym again, you know, it's almost like my superpower is acronym, but is, you know, if you love what you do, you're inspired by what you do, you're fulfilled and you're energized, you know, like that is the foundation of a happy life. And it sounds like, you know, like you're doing.
Where's the acronym? I missed the acronym. Where's the acronym?
Well, LIFE, life. So what do you love? what are you inspired by? You know, what fulfills you? What excites you? You know, like, because.
Wow, I never heard of that. Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how the point thing started, because it was a life point. So, you know, if I've done coaching for people, you know, people come to a crossroads and think, oh, I don't know what, you know, it's almost, I don't know if you ever come across Ikigai, which is, what do you love to do? It's like a Venn diagram. It's a Japanese philosophy for happiness and fulfillment. And it's, what do you love to do? What are you good at? What does the world need? And what's the world, you know, what will the world pay for? And it sounds like, you know, you found your superpower and you're in your sweet spot. I mean, I don't know if you're into Grant Morrison and the whole Marvel quality. You know, he's one of the, you know, the top Marvel comic creators. And
Grant Morrison? No. Yeah. But I actually bought, you know, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way. I bought that last week for a friend of mine, because I bought it 25 years ago in Florida. And I wanted him to do it because he's drawing a lot of stuff. But I mean, Grant Morrison, what has he done?
Okay, so if you Google him, but there's a seminal YouTube that I mean, this isn't for the podcast prep, but where he actually talks about magic, right? And the stuff that he's drawn, he says some of the characters, he ended up, anything that was he drawing for the characters were happening to him. even to the point that if he were drawing, you know, like a redhead, beautiful woman, and then he would meet her, you know, and have a relationship with someone in the flesh. So he was mixing metaverse before, you know, we were talking about metaverse. And I just wonder, you know, it's that intention. So he talks a lot about intention and bringing in, you know, like deep emotional connection into whatever the project is. And I think, you know, that this is what's happening with, you know, with you. Obviously, the more you think about this stuff, the more it starts appearing in your reality.
Of course, of course. And I think, like, I mean, maybe I know what you mean, but I'll just tell you how I interpreted what you said, right? I think that's that's the only thing that I can do right now. For me, it is when you're walking down the street and then you find $20 bill, or what do you have in the UK? £10, 20 pounds, £20 bill, right? And then after that, you look for more £20 bills, right? It's some strange thing that has happened. Then you say, okay, now I'm going to search for this. If I found this now, I'm just going to search for this more, right? You're more, you know, open to seeing that. But the other side is, if you haven't, you know, if you don't are open to anything, well, you're going to be closed. So I've been, again, like the last 20 years, I kid you not, I actually have, you know, been trying to solve all the problems in the world. That has been my 100% focus. And now I'm at the point where it's so fast that I understand both the problems, but definitely how to solve problems really fast, because that's the only thing that I've been working with for the last 20 years. So basically, your Venn diagram, this is what I'm really good at. You know, this is solving problems super fast. And the difference, I think, between me and, because I've been working as a management consultant as well, is that I don't specialize. I understand a lot of different things, and I mean, it's again, you just become what you're good at. And for me, it's trying to understand everything and solving all problems in the world. And there is a process right now that where I have, which actually seems to work, you know. But it's taking a lot of time. I mean, it's taking a lot of time and effort to be at this point. And the one thing that has been missing on your Venn diagram is, you know, getting people to pay for it. And as well as, you know, focusing on it. I haven't focused on making money, to be honest. I've just been focusing on how can we solve all the problems in the world. And that's what I love to do. And, you know, bring people in and stop wasting time. And now, luckily, people are actually starting to pay for it. But for me, that's just a bonus, to be honest. That people are starting to pay for it, because I do what I love. I love this so much; it's unbelievable.
Now and it comes across, and I can see it, and I think that's what the audience will connect with. You know, like it. So that's why, you know, when we first met, when I started listening to your thing, I was just very engaging and very intelligent. You know, like, I mean, you said the buzzword bingo. I mean, we've thrown in so many words that you could feel that.
And that's the end of part one. We had such an insightful and useful conversation that we've decided to put this out in two parts. Thanks for joining us in part one, and don't miss part two. I promise you won't be disappointed.